Okay, with that, then we'll reconvene to open session. And for the record, let's show that all five directors are in attendance at this point. So we'll have Ann please lead us in the pledge.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. With that, then we'll have the report. Pardon me, we'll have the report out of closed session, Mr. Seitz.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. We did have four items on tonight's closed session, all of which were pursuant to government.
John, would you like to start over, please?
Mr. President, we and members of the audience, we did have four items listed on tonight's closed session, all of which were pending litigation, and all of which are authorized pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. The first item was the ongoing Los Osos bankruptcy case. As most of you know, and there's copies of it in the back, Monterey Mechanical, one of the creditors, has filed an appeal. We did hear an update from legal counsel, but the board did not take any reportable action. The second item that was discussed was the Los Osos Community Service District versus Golden State. This is the groundwater adjudication. Again, the board heard an update from legal counsel, but took no reportable action. As to DeBing?
Comment. I would like to say we are going to stick to the 30 minutes this time. Last time I let it go a little too long, and we ended up going almost an hour. When the red light comes on, you can finish the comments you're making, but we're going to try to be a little more expeditious tonight than we were last meeting. So with that, then, we'll go to public comment on items not on the agenda.
Good evening, board and public. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I want to talk about the Los Osos Wastewater Project as envisioned by the county. And I would like to remind you that when we had an earthquake in 2003, you all know that there was $1 million worth of damage to the 16th Street water tower. There was a lot of damage to the fire department and other areas of town. Ground lurching was so severe that 100-foot cypress trees were whipping back and forth in front of me. I saw them. And water from swimming pools were thrown out into the street. In that kind of condition, with a liquefaction, high groundwater that we have here in perch water, if the county had been allowed to put in a gravity sewer, we would have had floating manholes like they did in Christ Church. They had a 6.5 quake. We had a 6.5 quake that was 40 miles north of us. Now, latest evidence is that Mr. Blakeslee, Mothers for Peace, are saying, supported by USGS seismologists, that there's now a shoreline fault that's very close to shore connecting to the Hosgery Fault, which is 7.3 magnitude fault. And the concerns they have is for Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. It's not designed for that level of magnitude, and they're righteously concerned. However, if we had that quake here with a gravity sewer in ground, we would have manholes floating, we would have lift stations floating, we would have pipe buoyancy, we would have disconnections, we would have leakage, we would have to have porta potties in front of most of the homes in the community that are in the collection system. And we do not have any funding at all designed for a repair of such a system. Now that's a $200 million system. The collection system would probably have to be completely redone. It would probably be in the neighborhood of $80 to $100 million more. So the question is, boy, they're very heavy. So with that, I would appreciate it if you would consider those risks. And also, I remind you to look at the Bay News. Past LOCAC president had an article in there. Thank you.
Frank Cilio, Los Osos. First, I'd say that there was a water board, regional water board meeting today in San Luis, and there's not a whole lot of those that do occur. And I was wondering, because I didn't see anybody from the board, that my presumption would be that there was nothing that you wanted to present during public, at least at public comment. Though there were probably about seven or more citizens. I think everybody who spoke on public comment was from Los Osos, and they brought up a number of issues. I would recommend that you may want to look, listen to the tape once it's put online. I don't know if you're familiar with their, they put the minutes and the tape of the meeting, and you go directly to the public comment section and listen to the recording of what occurred there. I think it would behoove you, because they ask questions regarding the ISJ. This is the first time I've seen them ask questions more in depth about the seawater intrusion issue, the county's role in it, though you guys weren't mentioned. Seems like there's a lot of interaction between the Regional Water Board and the county, and very little between you and the Regional Water Board. So I recommend take a look, listen to that, and when it takes a while to get on, I think at least a week or so to get on the tape part of it. The other issue is that I still don't, last month we discussed issues regarding the issue Marie Kelly and Pablo Ogren, and your John Seitz, your attorney, recommended that the public has an interest in that area, they can file. I still think this is something the board ought to be doing too, than just the public, for transparency, to get this out of the way, not to go after those, you wouldn't go after Pablo, but or Marie Kelly. It's more to let the public know transparency. You're willing to look at yourselves and look at your fellow colleagues about the issues and their involvement, anything that may have been conflict for the public, that you want to clarify it, that you like to see get it off the table, get it clean, and move on so that this issue doesn't hang over this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Spent to help residents reduce water use as much as possible, and they've got $3 million allocated. The conservation program in the draft form also does not reduce water use as much as possible. 50 gallons per day per person, the target that's identified there, is not going to be, even in the most aggressive scenario, won't be achieved until 2019. And that's way after it should be. That's probably 5 years after you could actually accomplish it. So we want to turn in some comments that'll show that. And we'll turn in, express several other ways that it could be stronger. The Los Osos Sustainability Group appealed the waste discharge requirement for the project. And I'd advise you all to go back and look at Roger Briggs' draft EIR comments, okay? And we were surprised, because he states that, he points out that Broderson leach fields can liquefy soil downhill from the site, especially during the rainy weather, when more water will be disposed. And he asks where the water is going to go. And the answer is, right now, nowhere. There's nowhere that they've identified for it to go. And Broderson is also supposed to mitigate for seawater intrusion. Mr. Briggs also points out that the salt and recycled water can destroy aquifers and soil, and he wants to know what mitigations are in place. The answer is none. And his draft EIR comments predate accelerating seawater intrusion, which raised the salt content of the domestic supply 40 to 50%. Treated effluent will now be much higher in salt content than the water under Broderson in the upper aquifer and also in farming aquifers. Salt contamination from seawater intrusion and recycled water will destroy the water. Marshall, you were in front of several agencies and you said that the project is needed to balance the basin. Well, it's not. Basically, the conservation program shows that we can achieve enough conservation to stop seawater intrusion without the project. The LOCSD was supporting the project, I think, a little bit because they wanted to get out from under the debt. Well, the way things are going, we might not end up even with the water, with the utility, the water utilities. So I'm wondering if you need to relook at that. It's time that that you might start thinking about not even supporting the project, because it'll help all the agencies be sustainable. It won't help the citizens be sustainable, it won't help the sustainability of the water supply.
Thank you, Keith.
Elaine Watson. Also want to support what Keith Weimer just said. Conservation is such a big issue, and you guys need to look at it very carefully and make your own decisions. Several of us were at the Water Board today, and there was an excellent presentation on nitrates. It lasted about 3 or 4 hours. It was put on by someone from UC Davis, and the other person was from Livermore Research, I believe, something like that. But it was very, very good. And it's going, apparently it's posted. The same team that did the presentation today also did a presentation for the State Water Board back in June. And one of the presenters said that it's posted on the State Water Board website, so you can go in and look at it. There was, as I said, there were several of us there, lots of comments on things that are going on with our project, with the nitrates especially. And the board engaged in conversation. They showed a lot of interest in seawater intrusion in particular. Frank has been working on trying to get that designated as a pollutant at the state level and is in that process. And they support that, but they don't have the power to do anything directly themselves. One of the things that was brought up was, they asked about the ISJ and wondered, were asking Roger Briggs if the ISJ was addressing seawater intrusion in a substantial way. And I don't know, we'll see what happens, what comes out of this, but they're very interested in it. So it'd be good if you guys got interested in it too. My last question, or my question to Dan is, did you check into the nitrate testing for the monitoring wells for us? Okay, thank you.
Public comment. We have anybody after Gwen, Julie, Richard?
Good evening. My name is Gwen Taylor. I, too, was at the Water Board today. And the Regional Water Board staff is oblivious practically to what is going on with the ISJ. When the question was asked by a member of the staff, what is the ISJ, I just about collapsed because I had just previously made a presentation stating that the ISJ is apparently an albatross around this community's neck. And until something is decided by them, there is no conservation plan. There is nothing that is being done by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the county, or this CSD. And as it stands now, the CSD may not be doing anything anyway. We have had saltwater intrusion in this community since 1970. None of us were here at that time, but that is a fact. The Water Quality Control Board engineers are the ones that determined that it was beginning to advance. Now, why would they not at this time consider it their problem when they did in 1970 is a good question. But we need to have some action, and don't put it on the purveyors, because we all have received an increase on those who are in Golden State Water Company's purveyors district. We are going to be paying a great deal of an increase, which is the third one that we've had in 2 years.
Thank you. Julie and Richard, and then we'll close public comment.
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker. Couple of things I want to touch on. Frank mentioned the Paavo Ogren and Maria Kelly disaster, and I would ask that your board maybe take a position, write a letter to the county, and offer your full cooperation within their investigation. We haven't heard if they've even contacted you to find your minutes, because your website's not always reliable. The ISJ came up. I'd be curious if any of you or your staff were at today's regional board meeting. You can answer that later. The ISJ is an IS joke. The groundwater management plan is still incomplete. We are years behind. I remember Paavo Ogren saying in 2009, when the coastal development permit was before the Planning Commission, that we would have it by the end of that year. And here we are rapidly approaching the end of 2011. That is required for retrofits on sale and any new development. So I remember that I think that question is still out there, and that ordinance was supposed to come back before the board. The county got $20 million from U.S. Bank. They repaid themselves $8 million, and there's another $12 million that really hasn't been publicly shown where it's all going to go. Should be $5 million right off the top in conservation. We should have been buying toilets and having them installed immediately, and that's not happening. Take a position. Make yourselves very clear that this is what the community wants to see. Last comment. Last meeting you talked about the nitrate testing. You also talked about the blending station and in the context of pursuing a grant for a nitrate removal over at South Bay. Your general manager characterized the speakers as not wanting a sewer when they questioned the results and nitrates. And I think we all know that that's inaccurate, an inaccurate portrayal of what this audience wants. We want the most effective sewer for our $200 million that is possible.
Keith, and then we'll close public comment. I have too many Keiths here. Richard, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Richard Margetson. I wish Julie hadn't brought up the retrofit upon sale ordinance, because that would be a whole 10-minute discussion. I know for a fact they're not monitoring that ordinance at all. But today, it's a shame that somebody from the board, and I know you probably didn't know in advance, I mean, it was on the agenda, but the agenda didn't specify how in-depth the discussion was going to be. Or the general manager couldn't have been at this meeting. This presentation of nitrate testing and monitoring and how often, I mean, it was fascinating. I mean, it was absolutely fascinating. And I think it backed up all of our concerns that spoke after that. And I think that's maybe why public, especially the vocal minority, which we were portrayed as back during the Move the Sewer days, you know, when they constantly collaborated with Richard LeGros and Stan Gustafson to make sure that the community was always informed that the threat of fines was over our heads and we were going to be fined out of existence if we didn't build the sewer and the cost of lawsuits and stuff. But I think as time's gone by, and I think as time's gone by in this community, some of the things that were done back then are now starting to unravel. And, you know, we weren't wrong on too many things. And I think in their own kind of quirky way, they've realized that. And I think they're today, and at the last meeting we were at, where they actually asked the county to look into the nitrate monitoring program and why it wasn't in place and why it had been, and you know, the information was valuable back then. Why isn't it as valuable now? All those things have kind of changed, and I actually think they're in a much more cooperative mood now. It was refreshing, but it's very interesting that as time goes by, how things that are portrayed as there's no way you could be right, or you know, you don't have a point, tend to work themselves out if you stick with it long enough. Thank you,
Richard. With that, then, we'll go ahead and close public comment. I just have a couple comments. I think, Dan, if we could get a copy of that nitrate presentation from UC Davis, if it's on the State Water Board website, and even put a link on our webpage to that, because I think that would be interesting to see. And then secondly, we already have agendized for our October meeting a presentation by Rob Miller on the Basin Management Plan. So you will get the IHJ update at the October meeting on the Basin Management Plan. Anybody else have any comments?
Is it good? Dan. It was asked of General Manager, will we be discussing the nitrate testing and monitoring wells? I didn't see his answer tonight. I was writing.
I didn't have anything written up, but I did talk to the county about nitrate testing. There is a tremendous history of nitrate testing basin-wide, which was the difference between, you know, I had reported last time that we routinely test our potable water production. And clearly there's requirements for the wastewater project to do influent testing, effluent testing, background testing of the groundwater supply, and it's that background testing that identifies those specific wells. There's no requirement for them to do any testing leading up to the project, but clearly once the project is operational, those requirements will kick in as conditions of the permits for operating the facilities. I also spoke with John Waddell to find out if when he thought the appropriate time would be to begin that background testing, and whether it would happen before the project started, at the time the project started, or at the end of the first year of the project, and he couldn't give me an answer. But I would suspect that to have good background data, they would do a round of monitoring well testing basin-wide right about at the start of the beginning of the project when it first became operational. That's me guessing at what the county would do to comply with the requirements of the permits for the wastewater project.
We had discussing this. The original testing that was done, was that the Regional Water Board that did the testing back in 2006?
Cleef Harrison Associates did the testing and the analysis.
Was it mandated by the Regional CSD Board?
Yeah.
The CSD did it.
Can we have the audience keep your comments?
Please.
But
I can't hear back. Right. I'm trying to listen to the board and the staff, and I can't hear everybody. You answered my question.
I think, Dan, one of the things that we talked about last time to follow up on where Craig was coming is from was what would it take to actually do testings of those monitoring wells right now, and what would the cost be? So I think that's the unknown question.
I did get some costs from Cleef Harrison Associates. We don't have the resources to do that in-house, either from a personnel standpoint or from a lab equipment standpoint. I did get some costs from Cleef Harrison Associates, and I thought I had given that to the public before. I can certainly make it available.
Well, I think we need to have that on your next utility advisory committee meeting as an agenda item where you guys can get that cost in this. There's a lot of feedback on these microphones today. We have our first item, public hearing item 3A, which is to adopt the district final budget for fiscal year 2011-2012. This board gave direction to staff at our last meeting as to what we wanted to see in the budget come back to us.
President Ruhelsky, I thought it'd be a good time to make sure it's clear that we're adding a couple of items to this agenda.
Sorry.
That there is a special meeting notice to run concurrently with this meeting to add item 5J to the agenda, which is another district position letter regarding Assembly Bill 506 that's being considered in the state legislature. And also item 6B, which is an advisory committee appointment. We got an application from Keith Swanson, who applied to the Finance Advisory Committee. So that would be item general action item 6B. With regard to the letters to the state legislature, there's been a recent update that Senate Bill 931 has been dropped. That was the one that would have prohibited districts from using outside legal resources for personnel negotiations. And that's been dropped for the reasons that the CSDA, the objections that the CSDA brought forward. So it doesn't appear that it's necessary to send that letter. It certainly wouldn't hurt if we did, but if you wanted to just pull that letter from that consent item, I think we could do that administratively. And then I believe that, well, there's maybe an item or two on the consent agenda that
we want to. Yeah, I think we'll get that when we get to the consent calendar. So anyways, back to, we have item 3A, which is adopt the district final budget for fiscal year 2011-2012. The board gave direction last time unanimously to go ahead and come back with the budget, which we had adopted as a preliminary budget as our final budget, with the addition of the items that were included as Appendix A by the district accountant. So that's what's back before you tonight. So Dan?
Yes, I didn't prepare an elaborate report because it's, like you said, it's fairly straightforward. And it's adopting the budget that we've been using with a couple of minor adjustments that just reflect the current situation. And so the recommendation is to adopt the budget as presented.
Any questions?
My name is Gwen Taylor. At many meetings, I have asked the question as to where the funding is coming for the ISJ. I have looked at budgets that have been printed out, and there is nothing that says law, legal, anything to encompass the cost for the ISJ. Now, if you have cobbled all of this together under legal fees, that's one thing, but I don't think it is proper. If you are taking funding from one group of budgeting to another group of budgeting in order to pay for the ISJ, where is the money coming from? Stop mixing, matching funding. Tell us where the money is going and where it is coming from. It's just like the county. They don't give us an answer, and I certainly don't expect this CSD to follow the county's example. I would say that they need to give us an answer where the money is coming and where it is going. Law, legal fees are expensive, as we all know, but where and how are they being expended? Don't mix and match. Put out the costs as they are supposed to be put out. The last thing is, I asked the question at the meeting held for finance. There is an item on the last law firm's example, the South Bay law firm, regarding a cost for a tax bill. And I'm reading it, and if you cut me off, so be it. Disclosed statement at part 3 or page 3 also includes in the Internal Revenue Service's administrative tax claims also included a claim for miscellaneous penalties of $140,303 for the fourth quarter of 2004 for this LOCSD. Disputes this penalty claim. We've never heard about this. Why? Where is that money? What happened to it? Is it a valid claim or is it not? I asked. I didn't get an answer. Please let the public know what in the world is going on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. In their statement today about nitrogen controls that lasted for about 2 or 3 hours down at the water board today, and they had a very nice picture, and they could show you where the nitrogen was coming from, whether it was coming from human, atmospheric, or it was coming from ag or animals. And I think that's really important because it gives a real meaning to the nitrogen levels. If you have 10 milligrams per liter and 5 of it are coming from animals or horses, then the septic tanks are not going to be very effective when they've been collected. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does anybody get it? Thank you.
Frank Zalio, Los Altos. I'm not a Richard Markison, so is there anything in the budget that shows that we're going to get any type of grant money for any type of projects or research or studies that is guaranteed so far? And if not, the question is that something that, you know, when you direct, when Marshall, you direct Dan to look at information, say, like the nitrate, is there money available for the study that it doesn't come out of our budget, per se, funds that are already there but can be added to? I think it's real important to start looking for grant money because I'm hearing people do presentations. They said, yes, this is from Prop 50 money. This is from whatever money, 2X, Senate Bill 2X. So there is money that other people are getting receiving that they applied for. And I think I'd like to see the CSD, you know, maybe if you start a committee on grants, like you have a safety committee and a finance committee, but have a grant committee. People, there's probably people in this community who have written grants and know how to do that and be willing to serve on that committee to look at those issues, to bring more money in so the other money can be spent in a different way. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Richard Martinson, I think I only have three questions, so I hope I get through them. With the appeal of the bankruptcy, are we basically for a year going to put on hold any potential budget adjustments unless it comes back? Okay, that was question one. Under solid waste, the final budget, which this is going to be inaccurate if you adopt the later agenda item. And then, here it is, I found it. Under the executive summary and the page before it, that the position allocations, it looks like this. Okay. Under the executive summary, it says a total position allocations in the water fund remain the same at 6.5 full-time employees. One of these positions is for a new entry-level water operator that still needs to be hired to backfill a position that has been vacant for quite some time due to a medical leave. And then, but in this chart on the previous page of the position allocations, there's six full-time and a half-time. But under the water operator one, the new hire in parentheses, there's salary and benefits listed there. And I'm wondering if those are salary and benefits for the entire fiscal year, or if they've been prorated to some point in the year that you're expecting this new hire to come on board, and those are the salary and benefits from that point forward. Because I think you know the reason why I asked the question, because either you'll have additional revenue or you won't, if depending on the answer. That's all I had. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close it, bring it back to the board. Hampi, would you like to answer Richard's last question about that position allocation? Go up to the microphone, please. It'd probably be better if you just communicated one-on-one, yes.
That's effective October 1st. In fact, we are gearing up now because they are so short-handed. We would like to go forward and start recruiting.
Excuse me. Any questions of the board? Social advisory committee, either or, yeah.
Come forward.
So can we have a motion then, please?
I move that the board approve the resolution 2011-21 adopting the final budget for fiscal year 2011-12.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second. Any further discussion? We'll have a roll call on that.
Director Wright?
Yes.
Vice President Muthart?
Yes.
Director Baltimore?
Yes.
Director Vogel?
Yes.
President Ohilske?
Yes. Okay, with that, then, we'll move to the administrative and committee reports. Tom, you have time to spend with us, or should I? Because I can adjust. I want to get my fire chief out of here, but. Okay. So we'll move to the administrative and committee reports. Excuse me. First one is the CAL FIRE manager report.
Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, I believe you have my staff note in front of you. Due to vacations and fire activity, I was unable to make the timeline, so that is on the back table if people are still looking for it. On the back table is the July 2011 chief report. In the month of July, Station 15 responded to 99 calls. Six of those were simultaneous calls, with four of those simultaneous calls requiring advanced life support. Of the 99, 67 were medical aids, with 38 requiring advanced life support. Three incidents were reported as traffic collisions, and there were a total of six fires. 25 or so miscellaneous other incidents were reported as well and responded to. Company 15 responded back to assist CAL FIRE staff at the station a total of 12 times. Also in the month of July, the hazard abatement program continued. As you probably remember, we issued 638 notices of violations in the month of June. Of those in July, 48 were reinspected and found to be still in violation. The other 590-some-odd did make their abatement. You'll probably notice as you drive around, there are a large number of parcels that are still unabated, and a large percentage of those are protected lots as required by or as allowed by the fire code of Los Osos Title IV. So currently we have about 25 project or parcels we're still working with, or APNs. A large percentage of those, I believe, are either foreclosed or short sale, and we're waiting for the process to go through to find out a legitimate owner. We've had a large percentage of letters come back as undeliverable or not at the size for the next week or two. Please get those in. If you have additional questions, you can contact me at 528-1053. We'd be happy to help you answer questions. Special projects. And we started meeting, as you may remember, with the California Conservation Corps and the Los Osos Fire Safe Council focus group on abating some hazards on CSD-owned property in the Tierra and Las Encinas area, the Greenbelt. That continued we continued to meet with those folks and meet with Fish and Wildlife Service to ensure that we had the right plan for the project. And so you'll hear in coming meetings, but that project will start next Tuesday with California Conservation Corps out on the ground near the cul-de-sac of Las Encinas on CSD property, and they'll work towards the southeast back towards the mobile home parks and the state park, clearing that hazard, the hazards off the CSD-owned property. Notwithstanding fire activity, myself and the crew, Engine 15, will be out there, and Engine 15 will be checking back and forth and working with the local landowners to make sure that we're on CSD property. A lot of the property lines are a little bit they're unclear in that area with all the vegetation. I did walk the two areas last shift through the in the evening hours and on the weekend, and met with about 8 or 10 residents who are just out. I found every single one of them very, very positive. We did receive one concerned phone call later on, and we'll address that. Basically, was making sure that if we go in there, that we'll be doing it with three C's crews and not CAL FIRE crews, which are at times inmate crews. And the other concern was having large piles left, and we don't anticipate doing that as well. So if you have any questions or concerns for me, I'd love to answer them.
Any questions for the chief?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Seeing none, you're out. Okay.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move to District Utilities Department report.
Thank you, President Ohilske. In July of 2011, staff submitted the monthly compliance report to the California Department of Public Health, and no problems or violations were noted. Total production for the month of July was 26.87 million gallons, which represents an increase of production over last year of approximately 3%. 57% of the water service area was billed for 25.2 million gallons, and this generated a revenue of $167,000 and change. The revenue is noted that the revenue decreased by approximately 4%, while consumption decreased by approximately 10% compared to this time last year. We also did some work at Vista de Oro on Bay Ridge septic sites, and those types of materials don't do very well in septic tanks and leach fields. So you should really only flush toilet paper and human waste. Please don't flush wipes of any kind down the toilet, even if the packaging says it's flushable. And our website has some excellent information on that if you want to go to lososocsd.com or .org. They both work. Or locsd.com, locsd.org, or you can spell it out the long way, which was the also works. With respect to drainage, in July, staff began working on report comments for a new MS4 or a new NPDES permit for MS4s. We're an MS4. It's kind of a quick way of saying small municipal separate storm sewer systems. And I reported before that there is a little bit of a backlash for the new requirements that are looming on the horizon, and there's a statewide effort now to try to make something happen to make more sense. Our current estimate is that in order for the district to comply with the new requirements, assuming that we could pass a Prop 218 vote, it would result in the current assessment of $16 per household would have to go up to $73 per household, which is a factor of five. And in addition, the board is considering an increase in their water quality fees that would be about 38%. And if that does happen, we may need to revisit the budgeted amounts for drainage, as well as the drainage fees for Bay Ridge and Vista de Oro. With that, I can answer any questions you might have on the utilities report.
Any questions, utility manager's report?
Yes,
Vice President Moonhart.
Yeah, well, a comment. That's a significant amount. Are we prepared? What does that mean? I mean, what does that mean for the average person?
It's kind of caught everybody's attention statewide, and we're a fairly small agency, but cities and counties are joining the coalition to resist this move by the state board. And it's pretty substantial. It's a very substantial increase, and a lot of it is monitoring and reporting. It doesn't really do anything to improve water quality, which is one of the major objections. It results in a lot of additional work, a lot of additional cost. To let them know that these are our feelings. Those are our major objections. Yes, cost is one, and they've kind of already responded to the issue of cost, saying, "Don't complain to us about cost, because what we're talking about is more important." Well, this is one of those things they kind of refer to in general as an unfunded mandate. Mm-hmm. It also requires that we pass a 218 vote. If we're unable to do that, we're unable to fund the program, we're unable to meet the requirements, then what do we do? You know, it's a very sticky situation, and we're following it very closely. Fortunately, there are a number of very large state agencies that are devoting a substantial amount of resources to working with the state to try to get this resolved.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, that... We have a dis.
Everybody's wondering what Dan is saying. He is not projecting himself at all.
Dan, would you like to give the general manager's report, please? And
please. Particularly with the last
Yes, thank you, President Ohilski. The general manager's report has three items this month. Septic tank maintenance is a big issue here in Los Osos, and we wanted to remind people that it may be 2 or 3 years before the wastewater project is operational. The idea of repurposing septic tanks and leach fields for stormwater percolation depends on whether these facilities have been properly operated and maintained. You can find good information on septic tank maintenance on the district's website. We just provide links to other websites. So if you go to www.locsd.org, you'll find some really good information from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. That's a real good resource, and it's presented in both English and Spanish. Another thing I wanted to report on is consideration by the IWMA, the Integrated Waste Management Authority. They're considering an ordinance that would prohibit single-use carryout bags. A copy of the proposed ordinance is attached to the general manager's report, along with a brief by the IWMA's legal counsel regarding a case in Manhattan Beach that involved a similar ordinance. It certainly seems to take a step in the right direction, although it is, seems to me to be a little bit of a small step. Wildlife Service, that snails will be an issue, and weren't required to go through the entire environmental process prior to submitting the application, but we would have to get environmental certification prior to receiving any funding, prior to executing a funding agreement, actually. So we continue to hold out hope that we can negotiate something without having to do a full protocol survey of the entire site. The area that we've selected to locate the facility is at next to the parking area. It's in an already disturbed area between the parking and the existing upper aquifer well, so it's very, very convenient to locate the nitrate removal equipment at that location, and in fact it would allow us to put a building over that well head as well as the nitrate removal equipment and make it one single consolidated building for that purpose. With that, I can answer any questions you may have on the general manager's report.
Yes, Craig, Director Baltimore.
Just want to make a comment on the single bag use ordinance. This appears to be more government regulations when it's not thought through. I know that myself and many people I know don't buy plastic bags or reuse the paper bags for other services within their house. And so just because you get rid of these plastic bags means you then go out and buy other plastic bags for your garbage. Because I line my plastic bags with it. So this looks like another regulation that when you think it out, you know. Yeah.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, we don't have a LOCAC representative, so unless you would like to give the report for them since you attended for the district.
Okay, well, I can give you a summary of the report. Met on August 25th. The sheriff was not there. They're out on a call. There was no county staff reports, and Supervisor Gibson did respond to several questions. There was a presentation by Lexi Bell, who's the assistant director of the Morro Bay Estuary Program, and they're having a public workshop on 9/29 for the update of their management plan, and all the public's invited to attend. It's going to be held at the Sea Pines Conference Room on the 29th between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Also, Fred Delegata on LOCAC is looking into bike lanes for Patriot Road up to the entrance to Montana de Oro. And Supervisor Gibson suggested some local group. I talked about the budget should be adopted as it was as the final for this year. I also discussed that in the near future, the CSD will be holding workshops in regards to open to the community on the budget. And also I told them that we do have a staff report being prepared, but it's not final yet. There were several public comments. One was a suggestion that a safety committee be established through LOCAC and work with the sheriff in regards to the high number of vandalisms and thefts that are occurring locally. And also another public comment about the budget workshop, which I answered. And then also there was a public comment about up in Cabrillo that, as we know, the streetlights have been turned off. We're not funding that any longer, but the homeowners are several that have contacted PG&E and are paying for their own street light to be turned on up there. And the HOA, Cabrillo Homeowners Association, is going to pay to have the light turned on at Pecho Road and Rodman, the entrance to Cabrillo, due to safety considerations. And their next meeting is on the 22nd.
And that will be Director Baltimore's meeting to attend, so put that down.
Yeah, we set a record as only an hour.
Thank you.
I just for the public's benefit, the Morro Bay National Estuary Program meeting was originally scheduled for the 24th. So people who are planning on attending on the 24th, it's been switched to the 29th, so it didn't conflict with the Audubon Society event at Sweet Springs on the 24th. So I just want to make clear it is now on the 29th. So with that, then, we'll move to...
No, I have one.
Well,
one.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Last meeting during the LOCAC report, there was a comment about a local commercial business wanting to convert over to residential. And I asked a question of LOCAC, and I followed up on it, and that was, is the county being consistent in using the percentages of water use that they used in the rates and charges, because that number differed than what was put in the, not the ISJ, but the report that complements it. To date, the county has responded that it's a low priority or item. They haven't ignored it. They just haven't gotten to it.
Thank you. Thank you, Leonard.
There was an item I wanted to bring up closer to the general.
July 27th, and we discussed the monthly finances. We discussed the fire hazard abatement program, how it was going. There was an update on the local hazard mitigation plan. We also had a more in-depth discussion about replacement of Medic Engine 15 and timeframes for replacement, and the committee recommended to this board that we replace Medic Engine 15 within this fiscal year and explore the sale of Medic Engine 15 to help defer the cost.
21.
Excuse me? Begin the process. Excuse me. I don't have the actual words of the... it was begin the process. There was a review of monthly fire department report, and there was also a lengthy discussion about the issue of insurance that is on the agenda here. Essentially, what we decided was to defer to the Finance Committee, and the Finance Committee also got more information and looked at that issue. But that was essentially it. The next meeting is now scheduled for the September 28th.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Do we have to, can we give direction to staff now to begin the process of purchasing a replacement fire engine, or do we have to agendize that and wait for a...
I believe that based on my discussions with the general manager, they're defining the process right now and moving forward through it. Actual purchase or we'll take board action, but they are going through right now setting up the process.
Okay. I thought the committees advise the board and then the board gives the direction to staff. So that's how I was proceeding and asking on this.
I think that Dan, the chief and Dan have been discussing this item, so I don't think it's something that was necessarily generated by us, quite frankly.
Well, they might have been discussing it.
Or we could piggyback on a larger agency and get a better price.
No, I'm not going to stop diligence. Get me wrong.
I think they're just doing research on the process at this point. If we want to agendize this for next meeting to give them direction to move forward, that's fine.
Or can we just do it now?
No.
Okay, then let's agendize it for next meeting.
I think we should.
Okay, then we'll just agendize that because I also can discuss this in my staff report for financial advisory.
Okay.
Any other questions of emergency services? Okay, finance advisory. Unfortunately, we meet the Monday before the meeting, so we don't have time to get a written report into the agenda package. But we had a rather lengthy meeting, and we did go over a few items in detail. Director Wright attended as his first meeting as a member of the liaison to that committee. We went through the warrant register and the cash reserve schedule, et cetera, and the committee recommended that the board go ahead and approve the warrants. We also had a brief discussion of the budget, basically, that the board had directed staff to make some changes to it, and otherwise that would be recommended for approval. We had a really detailed discussion about what is included in your agenda as agenda item 5E, which is the write-off of construction in progress account with the wastewater fund and approve adjustments to the fiscal year 2010-2011 budget. Just for your edification or reference now, because of that discussion and other issues that have come up, that item is going to be taken off the agenda and continued to a later date. So we have the Finance Advisory Committee did have some questions that are going to be addressed by both legal staff, or pardon me, our legal counsel and by the accountant. So that issue was addressed in detail, and because of that, we are continuing item 5E. We talked at length then about the extended coverage for management liability for emergency services, which is agenda item 5F on the consent agenda. Thankfully, and I really appreciate Director Wright being there and Keith Swanson being there, because we got a very, very detailed perspective on it that I don't think that a layperson could have provided. So that was a very detailed discussion. After the end of it, basically the committee recommended that we go ahead and approve the recommendation of staff. And as you know, Keith Swanson suggests we may want to pull that item. When we get to that consent agenda, we'll see. But the committee did recommend approval as proposed. We talked about the rate increase for solid waste services, which is an agenda item tonight. There was a discussion about the various scenarios and how that would affect our budget, and taking the franchise fee, how it would impact down the road. And Mr. Martin is here to discuss that item when we do get to that hearing item. The committee did recommend again that we go ahead and put this on for a protest hearing in November. And last but not least is everybody's favorite item, which is the scenarios on solving the administrative cash deficit, or deficit, pardon me. AMPI did provide one scenario for consideration of the board on how to address that issue. The committee did come up with another approach. So we are moving forward, and AMPI is going to provide another scenario for consideration at the October meeting of how to go ahead and take care of this issue. But it's something that will be addressed in the short term. It's been out there lingering since obviously way, way before any of us were on the board, but it's on the front burner now, and it will be addressed. We'll have another scenario at our next Financial Advisory Committee meeting. I don't know if we'll bring that necessarily at the October meeting, but it definitely at the very latest will be the November meeting. And I know that's something Director Baltimore would like to get buried. Yes. No more than I would, trust me. So that happened. That was the results of that meeting. Our next meeting will be on October 3rd. Prior to the board meeting on the 6th. Any questions? Okay, with that then, we'll move to the Utility Advisory Committee meeting.
Thank you, President Ohilski. My report is presented in the packet along with the list of action items, recommendations, and updates. On August 11th, the Utilities Advisory Committee met. Three members were present. We had three missing. And I think once we're through the vacation season, we'll have a better attendance here. Our first item of business was to review action items and recommendations. Dan reported that he is still trying to find out who will be in charge of the post-wastewater project street drainage improvement so that we can get a regular update and responses to our recommendations that we submitted in February. The action item pertaining to toilet retrofits was modified to ask staff to review the district's retrofit ordinance and to develop it to include those parts of the district outside the prohibition zone. Dan confirmed that there was information developed in the bankruptcy that will help in developing an asset plan for our district, and this item will be put on a future agenda to formalize a recommendation to the board. In our regular updates, we had an update on the WaterWise house calls. The committee, with public input, discussed the status of the water conservation efforts. We initiated an action item for the next meeting to present last year's conservation program to discuss public outreach efforts and to discuss public outreach efforts. The committee voted unanimously to recommend to the board to maintain the budgeted revenue for the conservation program. Item C, we discussed the cost implication regarding the grand jury report on tier rate information on billing. This was discussed, and the committee came to a consensus that it would be too costly for the desired effect. Committee voted unanimously to recommend the board direct staff to respond to the grand jury that we have determined that their request is not cost effective for the Los Osos CSD at this time. Item D, we were given an update on the Regional Water Quality Control Board changes in on-site wastewater systems criteria. Staff confirmed that this pertains to the county. The Regional Water Quality Control Board is pleased with our efforts to provide information to the public regarding septic tank management. We discussed the notice of intent for the Proposition 884 grant to purchase nitrate removal equipment. Although the committee voted to go forward with the grant application, there are several items that should be considered, including operating costs, managing the waste stream, and obtaining a discharge permit. Our final item, staff presented the options provided by Will Bellis regarding the 10th Street tank repair. Staff will receive the comments from committee and meet with the district engineers and get information back to Will Bellis to put together a final proposal for the 10th Street tank. That is my report.
Thank you. Any questions of Utility Advisory? Mm-hmm. Director Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, in regards to Proposition 84 grant, the purchase of nitrate removal equipment, that is a very important point, that the operating costs should be known. One of the things that comes to mind is that some PV panels were donated to Cal Poly, and that sounds great, but they're going to need about $300,000 in equipment in order to take the direct current and transform them into an alternating current. So even though they got what looked like a great gift, it's going to cost them dearly. Mm-hmm. So I think this should be known as we go along, or before we go along, or simultaneously.
Yeah, we're approaching it simultaneously right now.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? I think directors' reports at attendance at other agency committee meetings. Director Wright already gave that one. Do we have any other reports, attendance at other meetings, et cetera? Seeing none, do we have any response to previous questions that we haven't already answered at this point? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move to the consent calendar. Before we take public comment, I would like to again note that item E5E has been taken off the agenda. It's continued to a later date. And item 5J was added through the special meeting notice that you have here. So those are the items that we have on the consent agenda. Does anybody want to pull an item?
Well, because of
item F, I would guess.
Yes, right.
I was thinking. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that everybody wanted to pull F.
Well, I wouldn't be able to vote on the consent agenda.
Okay, so we'll put item F. Item F will move after 6B, so we'll hear item 5F after 6B. All right, with that, then we'll go to public comment on the administrative report, committee report, or consent calendar items. Thank you.
My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing. I want to address Dan Gilmore's remarks about septic management and others. George Taylor and a group of us worked up a septic tank management program in 2006 for the district. I don't know what you've done with that. That should be in the files. I don't know if you've seen it or not. If
fairly extensive. It was based on Howard Kolb's approval of a septic tank management program for the county of Santa Cruz. It included revenue and a yearly inspection, if I remember correctly. And I would also point out to you that UC Davis has excellent information, better than all the rest of the information that you have, which is usually from industry. UC Davis wastewater management program and George Sabanaglis, award-winning professor, was involved in that. And the presentation today at the Water Board was done by the people from Davis. They're familiar with that. And septic tank management is going to have to occur whether you have a sewer or whether you don't have a sewer, you know. And so everybody's put their big bets, $200 million, that they're going to be a sewer here. And I hope you guys are out there taking pictures of the floating manholes when the earthquake occurs. But we need to keep the septic tanks, and the Appropriate Technologies Committee for Green Build, Slow Green Build, who studies sustainable infrastructure, told me they don't think that the gravity sewer is appropriate here, but they also said that they would like to see the septic tanks used to retain water. I think that it would be a good idea to keep them as well in case we have an emergency and the sewer is destroyed by an earthquake, which is reasonable to assume, that we have a place to put our waste. Most of the leach fields are operating well. The nitrogen is created by Nitrosonobus and Nitrobacter and removed in the first 12 feet of soil. So if there's clearance from groundwater in those areas, then they're very effective in removing that. And when you do the nitrogen study, if you do it, you should do isotope like they did today at the Water Board, which will show you where the sources are, and you will find out that they're not all human sources, because we have a study that was done by USGS recently this year on one of the properties down near Al's on, you know, South Bay Boulevard that shows the 19 milligrams, none of it was coming from human sources.
Thank you. Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. I'd specifically like to speak about the South Bay Well report. Let me just ask, how's that low-effect habitat conservation plan going? I wonder if that's the question Julie Vanderweer asked when staff asked about putting a nitrate removal vehicle on the site there at South Bay. I recall that the Tenera Environmental did a snail survey back in about 2007, 2008, in preparation for the South Bay Upper Aquifer Well Project. Some 32 snails were found at that time. The community-wide habitat conservation plan is on shaky ground. The consultant has been fired, and Fish and Wildlife is asking for their grant money back from the county. So that's not going very well. Maybe this is a sign that this isn't really the way we want to go with our nitrate removal. It brings me back to the continuing question that I keep asking, and I think the public deserves this conversation, whether or not we want to drink our upper aquifer. I don't care if you take the nitrates out. There are other constituents in it, harmful constituents. These are our shampoos, conditioners, dishwashing liquid, dry cleaning fluids. That's poison, ladies and gentlemen. And I don't care if you dilute it 10 to 1, it can cause harm. We need a scientist in here to have that discussion, whether that's the direction the community wants to go. The ISJ is going there without our input. So I've beat this drum before, but 3 minutes here and 3 minutes there doesn't seem to be getting through to you. And the fact that maybe the snail is what's going to stop you, maybe the trigger I need at your head. Because the Los Osos Wastewater Project only has a permit to harm, injure, or kill 15 snails. 15 snails over a five-year period. Good luck, friends. Good luck with that. At least the Los Osos CSD's wastewater project had the luxury of killing 29 snails. Do you see the ludicrousy in all of this? There's something else to talk about. It's not whether or not we need a sewer. It's how we're going to do it and how we're going to do it without hurting our environment and hurting each other or ourselves.
Thank you. Frank.
Frank Asilio. Some clarification, Marshall, from the administrative report from Dan, because there was microphone difficulties and for hearing what he was saying. I thought he said that the septic tank maintenance program is important because if we want to use that for runoff, we're going to have a work-in leach field and tank. I don't know if that's something that's the county's already moving in that direction in a meeting he's been into, or if that you'll need to have that if the county decides this is what's going to happen with our septic tanks, because from what I know at this point, I'm not sure what they decided, whether we have to grind the top and fill it or that we can use it for a runoff. So if we clarification from Dan later about that. Also, on the single bag usage, does that include, because I was going to ask Supervisor Gibson on this question, but I was at the Lewis Black concert instead. I had a choice, LOCAC or that. Is a single bag usage going to be for places like Carlox and Ace Hardware, Radio Shack, those kind of, is like any retail business has to do that, or is that a focus on grocery stores? If you clarify that, I'd be interested in hearing about that. I want to report on Michael's things about the LOCAC when it was brought up. Thanks to Julie, I gave her, sent her an email. She was kind enough to present it to LOCAC for me. Again, I was busy at Cal Poly. I can see him in my head. Bad. I recommended a safety committee because they have a sheriff's report every month. And yet, there, you know, you have a safety committee here dealing with the fire department, and yet they get this report from the sheriff's and has no committee for people to provide input. And I'm not saying this committee should meet every month, but at least on a semi-annual basis to get input from the public so they can give feedback to the sheriff department. Also, I recommended that the sheriff, unfortunately wasn't there, give a full report of all crimes committed on either a quarter basis or a semi-annual basis and the resolution to any of those. So if you have 50 burglaries, how many of those have been solved? If you have car thefts, how many were solved? We haven't gotten that particular information at this time because I don't think anybody's requested that information from the sheriff's department. So when the sheriff's there next month, hopefully I'll be there. No concerts. And I plan to ask that, but I hope this board also supports that for the safety of the community so we know, and then we can plan the resources, request resources be implemented in a different way with the Sheriff's Department. Thank you.
Thank you. Keith?
Keith Weimer, Los Osos Sustainability Group. Just a little bit on the testing of the wells. The test wells we were talking about, Dan said almost immediately that it's too expensive. If it can save us $200 million, we should look into it. Now, I know you're reluctant to be thinking about the project not going through, but we are in a very unstable economy. And when you look at how little benefit we're going to get from that, possibility of a 20% reduction in nitrates over 30 years, you folks need to be looking in terms of how you will defend the community the best you can, because that's where all the money's going. Don't sweat it over the little stuff, folks. look at where the money is going. The presentation today talked about, you know, at the water board about nitrates. It made sense, for goodness sakes. I mean, it was basically an approach where you look at all the nitrate sources, and then you figure out the most cost-effective way to deal with it. 70% of nitrates come from sources other than septic systems. As somebody mentioned, we're not even going to get an improvement out of this project. And then we're going to have septic maintenance and drainage maintenance we've got to deal with separately. Well, the way to do it is to do it all at once in an integrated program like they do in San Lorenzo, near Santa Cruz, and other places. And you can do the whole thing for, you know, $1,000 a year or $200 a month for people. I mean, not $200 a month, but $20 a month for people. I mean, it's just an incredible amount of savings if you do it in an integrated fashion and you look at nitrates overall. These test wells, by the way, are good. We need to look at them because it'll probably show nitrates have come down. But the other point is that they're shallow wells. They're going to be adversely impacted by the project itself. Even shallow wells that private owners are using right now are going to be impacted. You folks also need to look at what the recycling water program is going to do. Okay, what's your position on that? I think you've been surveyed. I don't know if Dan's mentioned that, but I think the county sent out a survey to see what your opinion should be on that. Anyway, all we heard today was kind of excuses. The time you've been talking about this, seawater intrusion has contaminated a lot more water. It's been over a year since we've been talking about what an emergency it is, and we've provided you evidence. People are even talking about little kind of problems with the treatment facility. Hey, folks, when the wastewater project goes in, we still don't have the capacity to stop seawater intrusion. We still have to shift pumping to the upper aquifer. The only way you do that in the short term is a heck of a lot of conservation, an effective conservation program, but it's not coming forward at this point. Or you do treatment. So you better be looking at both.
Thank you.
Come on.
Any other public comment?
Richard Margetson, in the utilities report, I just, now that we're a full year into this new rate increase, I just found it interesting. I just ran the numbers. We had about a 7% reduction in consumption, about 17 million gallons, but we had roughly a 6% increase in revenue. So, you know, maybe we got close to getting it right. And the other thing that came out of that water rate increase is the reduction for the school district. And I think it'd be interesting if staff at the next water ops meeting just brief report or just bring the numbers of whether or not this has reduced their consumption, because they are getting a break in the cost per unit because of the, you know, tremendous amount of water they were using in the past. It'd be interesting to see how that's affected them and their water bills, and that I think it's time to follow up on that. In the general manager's report, I hate to be nitpicky, but this kind of stuff just drives me nuts. In the utilities report, when George used to do this, there's a paragraph on the second page that talks about this increase in the Proposition 218 vote increase for drainage, how it would affect the drainage budget. And the comment is, increase, we will need to consider a Proposition 218 vote to increase assessment rates from $16 per household to $73 per household, or approximately 500%. That's not 500%. 100% increase of $16 would be $32. A 200% increase over $16 would be to $48. A 300% increase would be to $64. and a 356% increase would be to 73. That's not, it's not a minor error, but this is, has been repetitive in the fact, in the past with the utility reports that, that the percentages and the, in the reduction of consumption and that have always been questioned and been inaccurate. My last comment briefly is Ron Munns and myself have been an ad hoc committee on reviewing. Can I have just a few more seconds?
On reviewing
the Madawis report for the water conservation and water demand component of the ISJ. Ron, from an email I got from him recently, will be out of town on the date of the water committee. I probably will be out of town that day. We are going to have comments for you, but do not think that that's the only problems we have with this report. What we're giving you is concerns about the structure of the program, but that report is filled with computation errors, population description errors that we're not bringing forward at this point, but relates to the accuracy of the report overall. So just keep that in mind, and maybe we can discuss it at some point later.
All right,
thank you.
Thank you.
Any further public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. I just have, I'd like to direct staff to come to follow up with the school district on the water consumption. I think that was a good comment because we did give them a rate break to preclude them from trying to draw their own, pardon me, drill their own well. So I would like to see what the impact of that was. And I can answer Frank's question on what septic tanks are going to be removed or allowed to be reused. That's going to be on a case-by-case basis. We've discussed that with the county because there's so many unique situations that there's not going to be a general policy, but it will be decided on a case-by-case basis. To just give you an example, I mean, my yard, I have to remove the septic tank just because the sewer line has to run through it. So it's a case-by-case basis. That's the answer to that question. Anybody else have any other comments?
All right, just one real quick. Frank asked the stores that would be affected with the bags, and the yes, the ordinance is in here. And just real quickly, it gives a definition of seven stores, from a supermarket to a large store with pharmacy, to a pharmacy, to a convenience store, to a farmer's market, to a nonprofit, and to a retail establishment. So
we got it. Any other questions or comments? Can we have a motion then, please? Nobody knows what motion I want, do you?
Sure, what would you like?
The motion would be to...
We need a motion to accept the administrator...
With the exception of item E,
right,
which will be continued to a date uncertain, but including item J, which was added as a special meeting item.
And, well, no, I take that back. We need a motion to accept the administrative report, the committee reports, and the consent calendar, excluding items E and F, with the addition of item J.
So move.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, that will be approved. That will bring us forward to agenda item 6, our general action items. Again, the order of these three items will be the solid waste collection rates and charges will be the first item. The second item will be the Keith Swanson appointment item. And the third item will be the discussion of 5F. So with that, Dan, 5A, or pardon me, 6A, please.
Yes, thank you, President Nohelski. This item's been brought to the board before. It's the requested solid waste rate increase. It's been requested by Mission Country Disposal, and they've laid out a report that identifies the reasons why they're seeking this 4.51% rate increase. And there was a couple of items that are worth discussing, I think, at this point. There was some discussion at the Finance Advisory Committee that we might want to use some portion of our franchise fee to offset this proposed rate increase, if we were to offset it all. the $160,000 franchise fee that the district, approximately $160,000, that we currently receive would have to be reduced by $72,000. It's possible to, I would guess, it's possible to find some middle ground and offset some portion of the of that rate increase with some portion of the $72,000. There's an infinite, almost infinite number of possibilities there. But I think it's important to point out that the 4.51% rate increase would have the following effects. The low income rate would go up by 51 cents from 1123 to 1174. The half can rate would go up 72 cents. The economy service would go up $1.11. And the standard service would go up $1.34. Those are monthly figures. So on your bi-monthly bill for standard service, you'll see a $2.64 increase. Or for the low-income rate, you'll see $1.02 for 2 months. It's up to the board, the pleasure of the board, as to whether they want to address that issue or not. To me, it seems to be not advisable to offset any portion of that franchise fee that the district currently receives to offset such a nominal rate increase. I think it's also important to note that the Mission Country Disposal last came forward with a request for a rate increase in October of 2008, almost 3 years ago. Part of the rate increase is being driven by an increase in landfill tipping fees. And the last time the landfill increased their tipping fees was 2002. So we've seen some great service and some great fiscal responsibility on the part of the garbage company. Unfortunately, in these economic times, their costs have gone up like everyone else's. And I think 4.51% is a relatively nominal rate increase. So the recommended action is that the board go ahead and approve the 4.51% rate increase and not offset that increase with any portion of the district's franchise fee.
We'll be setting that. I mean, the board action will be to set that for a 218 protest hearing in November.
That's correct. And I also would like to point out that it was the Finance Advisory Committee's recommendation that we go ahead as presented here.
Thank you. Tom, would you like to speak, please, and introduce yourself to our viewing public?
Tom Martin, I'm from Mission Country Disposal. Just to give you an idea, the South County cities, Pismo Beach, Grover, approved a 5.15% increase effective 10-1. Arroyo Grande is going to be looking at a 5.15. Avila Beach is 5.15. Cambria already approved a 4.32, and only because they have a 6% franchise fee instead of a 10% franchise fee like you folks. San Luis Obispo will be facing a 4.62% increase set for Prop 218 hearing on October 18th, and the Pomo effectively did a 5% effective November 1st. So the impacts of the $5 at the landfill and the impacts of the compost facility being closed are being felt from San Simeon to Napomo on this side of the grade. And other than that, the COLA that's involved in this thing is about 1.01%. And the South County cities had some concerns about it. They hired Bill Statler, the retired finance director from the city of San Luis Obispo. He performed a review of it and recommended that, given that it's been for 3 years since a rate increase, that the 1.01% of controllable cost increase seemed entirely reasonable under the circumstances. And I am here to answer any questions.
Questions of Mr. Mark?
I want to wait till after public comment.
Maybe after public comment, Tom, we can have you. Okay, so we'll open it to public comment. Pardon me, we do have a question from Director Vogel.
Well, it's not for Tom Martin. It's more for our general manager and legal counsel. Now, I don't know if the public is fully aware that the bankruptcy decision was appealed. And Mr. Seitz, what is your estimate in terms of the impact of this on how long the franchise fees might be coming to our district as opposed to going to the county?
I'm going to get out my Ouija board, which is represented by this little piece of paper, and I'm going to rub it real hard. And now I'm going to tell you this. I think there's two courses this bankruptcy can take. A is it can be settled, and of course it can be arguably done next week or next month. But if it's going to go through the hearing process, through all the appellate review procedures, before there's a final decision, I would estimate the appellate portion of the appeal would probably take somewhere between 18 months, a year and a half to 2 years, 2.5 years. Sort of keep in mind, that's just the appellate process. And I don't know where the appellate process would end. So just at this point in time, I would envision anywhere between a year and a half to 2.5 years to get it through the appellate process.
So during that period of time, it's my understanding that the revenue from this rate increase will be going to the district as opposed to the county. Is that correct?
Well, let me just point out just one thing where okay. I started from. I mean, it's a great question, and it's really relevant to your decision here. Cautioned with my first statement that these cases can be settled. My answer to your question is yes.
Okay. I think to clarify, the 4.51% rate increase would go to the garbage company.
All right.
But the franchise fee that they pay to the district would also increase by the same 4.51%.
Okay. And I would also point out, just in answer to that question a little bit more, that we would have this, that's why we approved this budget today, because we are dependent upon that franchise fee as part of the income that's generated, or the revenues that are generated in this budget. So that was an assumption that we did make when we approved that budget. So,
okay. Thank you.
I think given John's time frame and his Ouija board, it's safe to say that that will stay constant through this upcoming budgetary year. Any other questions before we go to public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to public comment. We're dealing with item 6A.
Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing, and I do appreciate Council's predictions with his Ouija papers. That was pretty interesting and not far off the mark, because it does take time for legal action, as you lawyers here on the board know, to go through the process. And Monterey Mechanical, who was the creditor who was unhappy, has been unhappy with both plans. So it's been a pretty consistent position from them. And it looks to me like they weren't happy with getting, the $2.8 million that the county threw in to buy the solid waste franchise from the district. Well, they would like to have your water company, or our water company. They would like to get a full recovery. And what was interesting is the county councils for the bankruptcy, there were three of them, and they were very expensive, professional bankruptcies. They baited Monterey throughout the second day, really sticking it to them, making fun of them, ridiculing them. And that's what I observed. And I felt like, you know, they were being arrogant, and I don't see that there was an effort to bring Monterey to the table to settle. So I think it's going to be a while. In the meantime, how is the county going to deal with not having the assets the district has? And that's why they wanted these three attorneys there, was to get the assets so they could move on with their sewer plan and comply with the USDA requirements. Right now, they don't have a place to put their new designs, their lift stations, all the rest of it. That property belongs to the district.
Thank you. Again, I would point out we're talking about tentative approval of a 4.51 rate increase and setting a protest hearing for November of 2011.
Keith Swanson, just to follow up with Mr. Vogel, in that timeline that you spelled out, John, Also, there's a LAFCO process that's going to be added to that, and do you have any idea how long that's going to take?
I would anticipate, oh, Mr. President, can I answer the question? Sorry, I didn't want to jump ahead. I would anticipate that the LAFCO process would be somewhere between 4 and 6 months.
Yes. Frank.
I heard information about the cost to live in and, you know, in the fees needed because places have closed down. What I'd like to also hear, too, is what the waste management people have been doing to save money also. So they give both sides of the coin. And I didn't hear that, and hopefully you can show that, you know, trying to be cost-effective by changing routes or getting different vehicles or doing something. Or maybe there hasn't been an ability because of whatever reason to have some cost savings on the part of the waste management people. But I'd like to hear if they do have any or if they've done any. I think that's important to hear. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Any further public comment?
Richard Margetson. Right off the bat, I have no problem with the increase of 4.51. I personally don't think Mr. Martin needs to even be here, but my problem is, because I do think they've managed as frugally as they can, my problem is we have not had the discussion, thorough discussion, of this franchise fee absorbing a portion of this increase for this community. Rates are going up on everything in this community. You should be in if you maybe you are, but you should hear the talk in the Golden State Water District right now. I had the manager of Morrow Shores Mobile Home Park come up to me the other day, flag me down to show me the notice that they're sending out to their residents for the increases that are coming for the water bills. And they were stunned. I mean, he was stunned. And he knew there was an increase coming, but he had no idea. Now we're going to have a trash increase. Assessment for the sewer is hitting the tax bills in December. This is minor, but it's an opportunity to hold our rates that we charge down and take and let the franchise fee absorb that. The franchise fee is a kickback, plain and simple. Plain and simple, it's part of the total budget. We get a portion of that. This community has not had the opportunity to vet this issue. And maybe there is a middle ground between the 72,000 and zero. Maybe we don't put the increase this time on the half can and the low income. See what those numbers are. We haven't had that discussion. And if you go to approve this and take the entire franchise agreement this time, we're going to start informing the community of how this process was not done transparently. And bring in the subject of this eventually being transferred to the county and why they sweetened the pot from 2.2 million to 2.8 to get this franchise agreement from us. Marshall's intimated that there's, you know, regulatory conditions are going to change possibly in the future that could affect this, and we might not be able to get the franchise in the future, and we're rolling the dice. You know, we haven't heard anything on that. I'd like more details on what he thinks is coming down that would just become law without it being protested by probably every community in the state to put additional restrictions on solid waste collection and related issues in a district. You have not had this issue. Don't make this like the fire tax was, gentlemen. Have the discussion.
Thank you, Richard. Any further public comment? Do you have any staff comments to any of the comments before we bring it back for discussion? Okay, bring it back to the board for discussion.
I have a question for Mr. Martin. What happens if the 218 fails?
Well, I don't know. We just did a 218 in Cambria, 4,000 customers, and they had 8 protest votes. I've never seen more than 25 protest votes on anything this small for garbage ever. And I've been doing this for 23 years. I guess we cross that bridge when we come to it. I don't really know.
I mean, is it like a reduction in service, or, I mean...
Well, obviously, we'd have to look at what goes on, because obviously the cost of disposing of garbage is one of the things that we have to do by law. You don't necessarily by law have to do recycling, so that could be one of those things. But okay. That would go against the AB 939 mandates of the state. So, rock and a hard place.
Okay, thank you.
I was just going to ask something that I thought about and Richard brought up is it possible to adjust these rates where we distribute them differently, where the low income rate is not increased and the others are?
From the standpoint of being able to do that, it's just math. Mm-hmm. Whatever the board decides they want to do can be done. Okay. However, I heard the comment that you have included $160,000 worth of franchise fee in your budget, which would mean then you would have to revise your budget.
Well, if we, or you added it to the standard service, I mean, you just adjusted it where you, it came out the same, but you just increased the others more.
Again, it's just math. You could play with the numbers any way you want to. Mm-hmm. However, then if you have a family of 5 or 6 and you happen to have one of the big cans, then you're going to be looking at a 8, 9, 10% increase so that the single person can get a break. I mean, it's really just a philosophical, distance as to where you want to go.
I was thinking of the low income primarily, but...
But, I mean, we're talking 51 cents. I want to keep it in
context. I understand.
Can I? You said in South County that they approved a 5.15%?
Yes. Actually, Pismo Beach did 9.05 because they raised their franchise fee to 10%.
Oh, so that was the reason for that. I was trying to understand why it was different than the 4.51 it was here. Okay. Okay, so that explains the difference.
Again, it's just math again.
Okay.
Any more questions? No. Oh, it's just the public, the comment was made just what sort of economic conservation if...
We went through a major reroute in 2008, and we were able to reduce one headcount out here. They have a new GPS program, and they're actually running it again to make sure that we're not, crisscrossing each other and trying to get overtime down and those kind of things. It's almost a constant process in the garbage business. We're trying to move to CNG trucks just because the price of diesel is eating everybody alive. When we burn through 40,000 gallons a month, and it goes up a dime and it eats us alive. So, unfortunately, a CNG truck is about $300,000. So it's going to take a little while to get there, but over time, that's the direction we're moving. We don't buy diesel anymore, but we are doing those kind of things.
I'd just like to comment about the regulatory issue that Richard brought up. The issue was that there's no guarantees that the regulations are going to stay the same, and there could be an impact on future operations. That was what we were told by the private lenders when we looked at the possibility of borrowing against the franchise fee, if I don't misunderstand. Do you have a view on what the regulatory climate is?
Regulations constantly change. The state of California is always passing things, and if you look at they've added fluorescent light tubes, they added paint, they added batteries. I mean, we are now, there's a big stratification going on. 3 inches of wine in the bottom of a wine bottle is a hazardous waste. So the state of California passes all kinds of things, and I can't pretend to know what they're going to do next. But
that doesn't affect franchise.
It doesn't, but it's the nature of the beast. Is they pass things up in Sacramento that have unintended consequences elsewhere, and you never really know what the regulations are going to do. And, you know, it's driving landfill fees, it's driving composting fees. The Air Pollution Control District is driving all the filters we have to put on garbage trucks and the changeover for the for those things. So it's, you never know.
Well, I think that's the...
Nothing goes down is the only...
Yeah, I was going to say the regulatory climate always gets worse, but it is unknown.
And you face it in the wastewater treatment field. It's not that much different.
We face it in the water delivery field, too. So, do we have more questions of Tom while he's up there?
No, I just would like to thank you, though. He's very informative and knowledgeable. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. So we'll bring it back to the board for discussion.
Let me just ask, is anybody on the board interested in adjusting rates?
Yeah, I know it's only 51 cents, but it's the fact, you know, a penny here and a penny there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that, I have that interest.
Okay.
The low income.
The low income.
Yes.
Right. I agree. I think we could probably move that around and have no increase on the low income.
I mean, it's all flexible, so as we mentioned in the beginning. So.
And I wouldn't even object to taking the lower income out of the franchise fees.
I don't know that we know what that
we don't know what it is.
We don't know what the impact of that would be at this point. So.
Yeah, it would pretty much require that we take this back, study it, come up with a number of scenarios for for meeting the 4.51% rate increase by hitting one user class over another a little harder than the others, or assigning different percentages to the different user classes, and maybe some scenarios too that might include offsetting some of that increase with the franchise fee. All of that, of course, takes time. Would take another meeting, setting of another, deciding on a scenario and the setting of a different protest rate, or protest hearing date rather, certainly something we can do if you'd like us to do that.
Yeah, I understand that. Do you?
Could you keep it down back there? It's really hard for us to hear up here. Thank you. Okay, Craig.
Yeah. Do you have that information? Do we have to go to Waste Management to get that information as far as the number of low income?
I'd certainly be willing to work with the garbage company.
Tom, Tom might have an answer right now. So.
He's waste the connections. Expert. You put a dagger in my heart when you say waste management.
I know. I was going to.
They're the big bad guys. We're the good guys.
Sorry, Christian.
To answer your question is no, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I'd like to ask Mr. Seitz if the direction is to make the increase zero for the low-income customers and add it to the 96-gallon customers, can we just prepare the Prop 218 notice, mail it, and adhere to the same timeline? Because I get concerned about delaying another 30 days, because then we got a 45-day window on the Prop 218 and then an effective date, which keeps getting pushed out.
Yeah. I just want to see where I'm coming from. I still have a bit of a bad taste in my mouth from how the county put together the rates and charges protest vote, because it was already put together when they took the comments. And so I don't want to follow the same.
The vote, we'd lose $5,000 in revenue for the district. What I was hearing from people is that they'd like to see it come from the franchise fee as opposed to shifting it from one category to another, but maybe we should.
Can I just make a real quick comment?
Yeah.
On this issue? You know, some of this stuff is controlled by the bankruptcy and the bankruptcy court, and the county, when we ran all these different scenarios about financing the pot for the Class 8 creditors, and the scenarios that they ran was based on a 10% franchise fee. I don't want to say necessarily that you're duty bound to it, but you're going to at least, in my view, need to think that out with the county's assistance if you're going to reduce that fee, because it changes their calculations dramatically.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
I'm just bringing this to your attention when you as you're thinking this.
So that may be one question.
Wait, I think, but John, were you done?
Yes.
I think, though, what Director Baltimore is suggesting, that we don't change the bottom line. We reproportion it or we reallocate it within the tiers. So the bottom line stays the same. It's just reallocated. Is that not what I understood?
That was the way I was suggesting it. Leaving the 10%, the franchise fee alone.
So I think the question that staff would have, and I think that Mr. Martin would have, is, are you suggesting that we would reallocate it proportionally amongst all the other classes? I mean, to me, that's it. You guys can figure out whether that's the fair way or not, because you know, Tom's going to know more about this than I am, but it seems to me that you have two other residential classes, three other residential classes that you're saying.
So what's the pleasure of the board at this point?
Well, I was thinking the simplest way would be to take the low income and just reallocate it equally amongst, or, yeah.
Make it revenue neutral.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. We're talking 51 cents.
Yeah, I understand that, and that would mean that, you know, people in the community are paying for somebody else. Yeah, I know it's only 51 cents, but it's the philosophical point there. So the easiest way to have the low income paid for would be it comes out of the franchise fees, because then we're not imposing anything on the other people. I know it's only 51 cents.
But I think that the franchise fees, I mean, we have a legal document that says it's this much. I mean, that's the bankruptcy.
It's like,
and,
you know,
and we're messing with that. That's,
right.
That's a whole can of worms.
And so.
Okay, we're gonna take a break in the meeting here right now. Okay, we're gonna take a break. We're adjourned for 5 minutes here.
Okay, we're ready. Excuse me, we're going to reconvene. Okay, we're going to reconvene and hopefully we can stay on task here. So we're back at the board with a discussion here of what you guys want to do at this point.
I'll just give you my preference. My preference would be the 2 week, take it back, call the county, say, you know, the franchise fee will be 9.9987% because we took the low Kim, you know, get the okay. Come up with a couple of scenarios and hold a special meeting. That would be my preference. Not strong preference, but that would be mine.
My preference would be to just take a look at the scenarios where... Yeah, I think it is. Where we take a look at the scenarios where we just integrate the low-income increase into the other plans, and you could do it proportionally, you know, how many people have Afghans, how many people, I mean, you can come up doing the arithmetic on that, and I think I suspect it would be negligible, and I...
You know, it's about five different times over the past 10 or 12 years. You always seem to be gerrymandering the rates to kind of do the same kind of things you're talking about tonight. And Oceano has done it, too. Other than that, everybody just kind of sticks to the across-the-board stuff.
So on the 218 vote, it's explained that this category is going to be a 0%. This is going to be a 4.8%, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm required to show every line item rate and what it is now and what it will be after the vote, so that one would just be no effect.
Just, is there a little information pamphlet that comes to the 218, meaning that would there be a, you know, if it were all the way across, or?
Generally, the format is regulated by law, just says when the public hearing is, when this is, and then I publish a four-page list of every rate I have for every service, and it just says old rate, increase, new rate.
Gotcha. All right.
And then it explains how to file the Prop 218.
Somebody has to come up with an idea. Lay something on the table. We can.
Okay. Well, I would make a motion that this rate increase be allocated so that there's a 0% increase for low income, and the other three categories will bear an equal share of that, if that's something that can be done. Is that something? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay.
I will second that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Let's have discussion on the motion, please.
That equals roughly 17 cents per category increase. So,
just for my clarification, are you talking about proportional through the three categories, or just the, so
that you have a net zero revenue
right,
change?
Right, I understand that.
Yeah. Okay. So, I guess what you'd have to do is figure out how much revenue is lost by maintaining the status quo for low income, and then take that revenue loss and divide it. I don't know that that wouldn't be necessarily proportional.
Depends on the number
rate
of users.
Wise. Yeah.
And these are just the residential categories. There's commercial rates. There's rates for picking up of overstuffed items and appliances and things like that. Like Tom alluded to, there's four pages worth of rates.
Yeah.
No. I don't want this just dispersed amongst residential. Everybody that's in.
Yeah.
So low income is dispersed amongst everyone. If we're going to do a one time, let's do it. Let's get it done tonight.
So if I understand you correctly, Director Baltimore, what you're saying is that the objective here is to come up with a 1% increase that would apply to all the other rates, so that there is no increase in the low income residential rate.
That's what I was thinking. Yes.
So I would have a question for Tom. Is that something that we could project?
You just figure out the lost dollars from zero increase on low income,
and apply
then you divide it into the revenue base for everybody else. It's just math. Everybody else, you know, instead of being 4.51, it might be 4.58.
What if
I don't know what the actual numbers are, but that's the kind of thing you're talking about.
What if we?
Because you're spreading a small number over a large base.
Okay.
You're spreading it over $1.7 million annual revenue base.
What if we wanted to reduce the low income rate to say $10?
Come on, Gary, give us another variable. It's only 9:30. Come on, we can be here a little bit longer.
So let me ask you a question of John at this point. If this is the direction that the board gives, can we take an action on that tonight and then set the protest hearing for November 3rd, or what do we need
yes.
to do? Thank you. So what's the preference of the board? We have a motion and a second. We have discussion.
Okay, so I guess we should probably word this appropriately, the motion. It would be to approve the rate increase so that there is a zero rate increase for low income, and the remaining rate increases be even among the other three residential categories so that it's revenue neutral?
No, I don't think that. What I understood you were saying,
okay.
and correct me if I'm wrong, is there'd be a 0% increase in the low income rate and all the other categories would pick up the loss.
Right.
Not just residential categories, all the categories.
Okay, yeah, everything, sorry, yeah.
And you're not approving the rate, you're just giving direction to send out a Prop 218 filing.
Give me 2 cents. I demand that you get 2 cents. To cover the garbage increase for the low-income people.
Isn't that what's happening for the low-income anyway?
I don't know.
The reason for that is not that I don't want the district to be generous in dealing with the public, but that it could affect the bankruptcy proceeding because we have an obligation.
I understand that. And again, let's take 2 weeks out, call up the county, get that number. Because, you know.
And those 2 weeks will cost the district probably $2,500 in revenue.
No, there's no change in
revenue. No, if the franchise fee is. Excuse me.
Richard.
Right.
I have no problem if we want to go ahead and try to schedule a special meeting to discuss this at a later date. We're talking about then having a special meeting for the protest hearing too, or I guess.
Yes, the one thing you got to remember is that as you kick out the effective date of this thing, is we're on a 2 month billing cycle for residential, and I'll have to check and see where you're at or even, but you may end up missing the residential billing cycle, which means it might be January or February before it actually takes effect.
Right. If the board's preference is to come back in 2 weeks with
I can tell you what my preference is.
Yeah, I know. Quite frankly, I would rather come back myself because I don't like doing something on the run here, which is how I feel about this, quite frankly. I mean, I'd rather either come back in a couple of weeks or approve it the way it's drafted. But I think once we start making changes, I think we need to have a more detailed discussion of the impacts of those changes. But that's my view. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. As it is, or else if we're going to make changes, we got to have confidence in our changes, which would mean I'd come back.
For clarification, what your response to my comment before was essentially that if we do take 2 weeks to kick this over and the 218 vote has to be continued, that we could miss a billing cycle in the revenue increase?
Two
months?
They're bimonthly, remember. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, which would make you odd cycle. So 11, if you miss 11-1, then you're 12-1, then you're January 1st before it becomes effective.
Well, see, we're on 11-3 now anyway, so we're missing 11-1.
So it would be 12-1.
I think my numbers were off, though, in any event.
But my understanding is 2 weeks, if we delay that, would our decision direction for 2 weeks, that doesn't affect, we'll still be able to get in within the protest vote for November 3rd, and so everything's still going forward.
It makes it September 15th, 45 days from then would be the last day. You couldn't do it until October 31st for an effective date of November 1, or else it'd kick to December 1st in order to be effective.
Now, I mean, we're not, the protest, this has the protest hearing set for November 3rd anyway. So we could still kick to that day even if we put this on. I mean, I understand we're losing 2 months on the, we're losing that bimonthly cycle there, but it looks like we're losing that regardless at this point.
If we're able to get this back in a special meeting for the week of September the 12th, then we'll still make the November 3rd protest hearing date. But it does require a special meeting or a decision to be made tonight.
Yep. Let's do it. Well, we have a motion on the floor that we'll have to vote on. So if we turn that down, then we can take an alternate motion.
Can we get clarification on the motion?
Pardon?
Can we get clarification on the motion? As I understand it, it's to come up with a fixed rate increase that affects all user classes and garbage company rates other than the low-income residential rate.
Correct.
And the amount of the franchise fee would stay the same.
Correct.
Correct.
That's the motion. So, any further discussion?
Call for the vote.
Okay, so that's the motion that's on the table right now. So, can we have a roll call then?
Director Vogel?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
No.
Director Baltimore?
No.
Director Wright?
Yes.
No. Okay, so do we have another motion then?
Baltimore.
So how are we going to word this?
It was your idea.
I know. Also as specified.
Well, can I try to help you here? I think what you're talking about is different scenarios for allocating the increase in the low income.
Right, which includes communicating with the
county. Well, it also includes, includes communicating with the county regarding the franchise fee.
Right.
And then coming back with scenarios based on that communication.
Right.
Is that a better way to put it?
Yes, and we'll have a special meeting for this.
Yes.
All right.
So that's your motion. I'll second that motion. Is there discussion on that motion?
Could you read that back?
It's my understanding the motion is to explore with the county the idea of taking the low-income rate out of this equation and absorbing that by reducing the franchise fee percentage.
Yep. Well, I think at least I would rather just have a more broad-based question to the county, rather than trying to, it seems like me, you're trying to find, really fine-tune this to one question, but if we're going to come back with multiple scenarios, which is what I think we're going to do, then we need to just have more of a basic answer on what's the impact on that rather than just that one scenario. Because what we're asking for is a few different scenarios of how this could be accomplished, not just through that one single scenario. Because I think if we were only looking at taking zero on the low income and spreading it out over everybody else, we'd do that tonight. So we're looking for different scenarios other than just that one.
Right. So again, this, to put it back on the philosophy of it, the idea is to, as the word was used, to vet. So to see the different scenarios.
I can certainly understand the need to communicate with the county on this, on any issue that would result in a reduction in the franchise fee percentage. I would be looking for some additional direction on the number of scenarios and whether you what types of scenarios are we looking to focus on residential or hit commercial harder, or how do we want to try to make up for this?
Do you mind if I jump in and help you?
Yes, Tom, we would really. I was just going to ask for your help.
Come back with five scenarios. Come back with an original scenario of 4.51 across the board to everybody, same as. Option two would be to swap
field. I think that makes sense. I think that's where Craig and I were trying to go. Is that I think that's better direction than what we were. That's where we were trying to go, anyways. Director Vogel.
Yeah, I was just wondering if our reducing the franchise fee at this point would tie the county's hands in terms of renegotiating with the franchise fee, that they could increase it sometime later. Is that something, John, that you know?
I think that's the question we'll be asking.
I think that's a question we'll ask the county.
Okay.
I think that staff is going to have a detailed discussion with the county as far as a number of aspects of this. So that will just be something we'll get back from them. Tom can give us five different financial scenarios, projections, and we can deal with those. So we should be able to have all the information before us. It's just a question of what the timing is. Finance Committee will not be able to hear this item. I can't put it off for another month. We will invite them to the hearing and have them allowed to. If we're.
You're going to have an open public meeting then?
Yes. That's what we're talking about.
Special meeting.
Special meeting.
Jeez. Special meeting.
Sounds good.
I'm just curious, who at the county then do you run this by? I mean, is it the. The bankruptcy attorney?
Public Works.
Public Works, okay.
I think Warren, too. You'll have to run it by Warren Jensen, County Council, and I think you'll have to run it by Supervisor Gibson, too. So then if what I'd like to do is, if this is the way we're going to go, I think we need to establish a special meeting date now, too, so we can make sure that that's. Everybody has a calendar on their table, so.
Two weeks of the 15th.
We can set it for whatever day we want, quite frankly, so.
Well, how long does staff going to take?
Yeah, how long do you guys think it would take? Tom, you said you could do it in an hour. I'm not going to hold
for this for meetings. Right. I think here, but as the alternate regular meeting night.
That's our normal special meeting night, correct? Is the 15th,
right?
The second Thursday.
Fifteenth sounds good. Anybody have a problem with the 15th?
I really like the 14th.
That's the UAC meeting.
I know.
I could possibly.
No, if everybody, I'll make it. I'll just.
Okay, so then with this motion, then we would go ahead and get the scenarios from Tom. You would contact the county. We'd have a special meeting on the 15th to discuss this as the sole item on the agenda. Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be your motion, Mr. Director Baltimore?
So, yes.
That would be, I will second that motion. Is that? So, do we have any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, then we will determine the time and location and we will post that. We don't know at this point. So, let's go ahead and take a roll call then, please.
Director Baltimore?
Yes.
President Oglesky?
Yes.
Director Vogel?
Yes.
Director Wright?
Yes.
Vice President Mudhart?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So that will still allow us then to bring forward the protest hearing on the 3rd.
Okay, then we'll move on to the agenda. That will bring us, thank you, Tom. That will take us to item 6B, which is the item added to appoint Keith Swanson to the Financial Advisory Committee. Dan?
Thank you, President Ohelski. We received an application to the Finance Advisory Committee from Keith Swanson. There's only two members currently sitting on the Finance Advisory Committee, so we welcome his participation there. And the staff recommendation is that the board approve an appointment of Keith Swanson to the Finance Advisory Committee.
Any questions of staff?
No.
As Director Wright can clearly confirm, we are looking for people to fill it, and I think Keith will do an excellent
by the community before it comes to the board, because the budget, and that's why I brought the question up earlier, the budget you just approved doesn't have this increase in the franchise fee in it. It doesn't matter when you do this. You should have taken the time to have the special meeting or put it off to the next agenda and have the Finance Committee look at it and have the public input. You basically, by letting this be absorbed by the other, if that's the direction, by the other classes, you basically have made this a social program now. And that's not the scenario. And we're talking minor dollars. If it's $6 per household savings for the year for the low income, and there's 1,000 in that category, which I would doubt, we're talking $6,000. This can be absorbed. But there's a number of other scenarios. And the county, you shouldn't let the county dictate to this district. This deal for them is really sweet down the road, because the community is going to be paying this project off for 40 years. This franchise, this $2.8 million is going to get paid off in less than 20 years. And then they're going to have a franchise fee that's probably going to be in the $250,000 to $300,000 range a year with the every 2 year or 3 year increases that have been historical from the garbage company. This is a super sweet deal for the county. I think we got screwed on it. I think it's going to be part of the discussion if the right scenario doesn't come forward, and I guarantee you that there'll be more than 28 protests if Mr. Martin's correct that that's the most they've ever gotten from a district if you don't do the right thing on this. And it should be at Finance Committee.
I'm not sure what that had to do with the appointment of Mr. Swanson, but
that we need Keith on there because so you can have a forum at the meetings.
Okay.
At the meetings, you don't have a forum.
I move. Are we done with public comment?
Oh, we closed public comment, yes.
I move move that the board appoint Keith Swanson to the Finance Committee.
I'll second that.
Moved and second. Any objection to unanimous roll call?
None.
Seeing none, then Keith Swanson will be appointed.
Thank you, President Ohelski. This has been brought to the board on at least one other occasion where we looked at it in quite a lot of detail. I have to admit my understanding of the situation has increased quite a bit over the time that we've been discussing it. At the Finance Advisory Committee, we took a look at a table that was prepared for the Finance Advisory
Dan, I just wanted to, for the record, that Director Muthart is stepping down on this item.
Okay. The Finance Advisory Committee, after seeing this table that's been presented, the one that says LOCSD insurance costs in bold and underlined at the top of the page, it shows that the Brown and Brown policies had an expected cost from this point forward of $67,000 annually. The equivalent policies from SDRMA, $50,960 annually. Actually, they're not entirely equivalent. Some of the SDRMA coverage limits are much higher. In addition, all of the policies are
occurrence-based rather than claims made, since the sum of the Brown and Brown policies were only claims made policies. That triggered the need for tail coverage to extend the coverage period or extend the period within which the coverage would apply, but it would still only, on into the future, it would still only cover that period of time that we had the Brown and Brown policies. During the Finance Advisory Committee meeting, there was a very good question that came up, and that was whether the extended reporting period for the umbrella policy extended the coverage limits for all of the policies for the umbrella or just the management liability, which is specific to emergency services. I was able to make some calls and determine that that amount, the $5,496 of one-time umbrella coverage, only extends the coverage limits of the management liability policy. So it is strictly limited to emergency services. The extended reporting period for management liability and the umbrella policy are both apply only to emergency services. And then, as was discussed at a prior board meeting, the extended reporting period for the E&O covers the board, and that was approved at a prior board meeting. That's the $19,000 figure. When you add it all up, if you look at the columns and rows at the bottom, and I'm available to answer any questions. The recommendation is to go ahead and approve this purchase for the one-time costs of tail coverage for management liability and the umbrella policies for emergency services.
Thank you. Any questions before we go to public comment?
I have one. Dan, who talked to you about the umbrella tail coverage only extending to the emergency services?
That was our representative from Brown & Brown. They're the ones we have to buy the policies from the original policy providers, and that was through Brown & Brown Insurance.
Okay, so the previous tail, the $19,000 covered the other aspect of the umbrella retro?
No, I don't believe so.
Was the original management portion of, not the fire department, but the management of the CSD portion of the policy, was that also claims made under Brown & Brown?
The E&O insurance was a claims made policy, and that required the tail coverage that's listed here at $19,050. I don't believe that was covered by the umbrella policy. The umbrella policy was strictly for the emergency services. I'm not sure whether it covered the E&O at all, but I after talking with the representative from Brown & Brown, it was my understanding that this umbrella coverage would only extend the policy limits for the management liability policy and not the E&O.
Yeah, because I have a problem sticking the fire department with the whole amount. Because it just doesn't sound right. That's my comment on that.
Any other questions? Okay, let's go to public comment. Mr. Swanson, our newest member of the Financial Advisory Committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Keith Swanson, I agree with Mr. Wright. The umbrella policy, you know, talking to Phil Veneris, as he said, that actually the insurance that we're actually providing now is more than what they actually require. So if we could save, you know, the cost of this umbrella policy, which is a $1.3 million policy, and we're adding, I think the remaining money, it's the AMPI created a ledger there just so that she could add that money to it. But I would like to see that money go back into sinking funds or something else and just remain in the fire department than taken anywhere else. And one of the comments were, as part of the finance committee, is the broker. And the fact that generally an insurance company will advise you 60 days before a policy expires, and then it's common knowledge that a broker that's handling a claims made to an occurrence policy would know that there's going to be a difference and that there's going to have to be tail coverage to cover all of this, and should have let you know before you actually committed yourself to this new policy. And I think that there should be some negotiation with the fees, the broker fees, because they sent you a letter after the fact and actually extended your time, your coverage period. And I just something to consider is a savings for the community and also for the fire department.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. First of all, I have a lot of respect for Grandfather Swanson. He has a lot of experience, and he's a very conservative-oriented thinker, so he's not a big risk-taker. And I think there's some thoughts going on about the possibility that the fire department could cover that liability. So I think that it would be a good idea to see if the fire department has that capacity to cover that, even though you call them employees from the district. So I don't know. I think that one, that needs to be further investigated before you make a decision on dropping the hammer. And by the way, anybody that's got a liability against the district is going to have to get in line with the rest of the creditors in the bankruptcy.
Thank you. Richard?
Just a couple quick things. Those last two numbers could go up. Could go down, too, supposedly. But what I found also interesting is Phil's comment that we're already covered, if I heard Keith correct, we're already covered through them at a higher limit than we're talking about with this additional coverage. Doesn't this seem like maybe being overinsured on the umbrella portion of this? And I also agree with Mr. Wright that I don't know that the fire department should be absorbing 100% of this. That's it.
Just one quick question. Since Richard didn't run out of his time, okay. You can use the rest of his time.
It had to do with, I asked a question of what the self-insured retention was, i.e. the deductible with SDMRA. What we pay out of pocket before we utilize them.
All right. So, at the Financial Advisory Committee, we did talk about this at length. The thing that I'm still don't understand, and I guess I don't know how we're going to get an answer to this, and we obviously have to make a decision because we have a time frame to do this. But I just don't understand what we're covering here. That's what I don't understand. Because in talking to the chief said that their insurance covered us on this particular issue. And I guess Mike, if you want to.
The difference is that their policy in this regard covers their management actions. And the fact that the CSD is the employer of the reserves puts our management on the table also to a lesser degree, even though they're supervised by CAL FIRE, there's still possibilities.
So you're talking about a contingent liability scenario where somebody files a claim and they sue everybody that was involved.
Exactly.
And we're one of those parties.
Right. And I mean, we're talking about reserves.
Right.
Not the rank and file fire department. We're talking about reserves that, 4 years from now, they determine in their own mind that the actions of the CSD or our CAL FIRE kill their firefighting career, they come back to us. That's what this is about.
And we don't have, as part of our agreement with CAL FIRE, there's no indemnification or hold harmless in there, so we are exposed.
That pulled us in. CAL FIRE is going to be behind us on that one, too. The umbrella is excess, and I think we have enough underlying on taking that first portion. So I would amend the motion to just limit it to the first part of the proposal and eliminate the umbrella portion.
Just to provide a little additional information on the underlying insurance that the umbrella policy would extend, basically we're talking only now about the management liability.
Correct.
The management liability coverage from Brown & Brown through from VFIS through Brown & Brown would provide a $3 million aggregate limit or $1 million for each wrongful act or offense. The umbrella coverage extends those limits to $5 million and $10 million. So those are the numbers we're talking about.
Well, yeah, I understand that.
I mean, I in this particular case, this is your field of expertise, and I would defer to you and Mr. Seitz as far as what our exposure is and what we should need to do.
Well, again, I would think that I think the umbrella portion is kind of overkill in this regard. As long as we have the extended coverage under underlying policy for the retro, I think that's going to be sufficient. Because the scenarios are pretty limited.
Now, wouldn't the umbrella be applied to something that has already happened?
Well, they both are.
Right.
Umbrella is just war coverage retro.
And my thought is, if there's something that would be more than $3 million that has already happened,
$1 million.
Shouldn't we know about it?
Well, I agree. Yeah, no, yeah, there'd be rumblings of it. So that's why I would like to modify the motion and just go for the extended coverage for the management liability and drop the umbrella portion.
John, do you have any comment on that? Or
well, the short answer is no.
Okay. we'll go with that then. So are you going to make a motion to that effect?
Yeah, I will. So I move that the board direct staff to purchase the extended coverage for the management liability to come from Fund 301, and the amount will be $6,298, period.
Is there a second?
Second.
Oh, that was quick.
That one's fast.
This one's the one that I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Okay, we have no... Is he still in the audience? Yeah, Leonard should be in the other room. Yeah. You can invite him back.
You can come back.
So that will be, we have no continued public comments since we finished it off. Closing board comments, do we have any?
President?
Yes.
I'm assuming that Director Muhart was declaring a conflict of interest
yes.
when he left his room, and it's clear that, you know, he has to state the nature of the okay. conflict on the record, and he escaped so quickly that it,
well, I think that it's a potential conflict, but to avoid any questions,
right,
but would you
I
like to
you
state what it was?
I really need insurance.
I think everybody would leave the room if that was the rule.
The conflict is that my son, who is still a dependent, was a former reserve firefighter.
Okay.
He's not going to sue us, is he?
Potential conflict.
It depends.
Okay,
what
let's
you voted.
Go. We'll go. Closing board comments, Director Wright.
I have one thing I'd like to bring up. I think it should probably go to the Finance Committee first. But one thing I noticed is that the work comp premium, there's an increase of $10,296. And this was primarily because the work comp policy. Lost their schedule modification credits, and that's usually due to higher claims. But what that also indicates is that there's a safety program issue, and I think we need to review the safety program.
I think since you're one of the liaisons to the Financial Advisory Committee, we will put that on an agenda.
Okay, thank you.
You can be there to discuss it. Director Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, just...
We got 2 minutes.
Okay, so I'll say this really fast. I am still missing the dots on the nitrate testing. So first dot is the water, the regional board says, hey, you got a problem. And so you have to build a sewer. And you have to create a prohibition zone because it's from concentration of people. The last dot is the sewer gets built and it's supposed to correct the problem. But the missing dots in the middle are, what's the plan? Are we, you know, we should be monitoring, or the county or the water control board should be monitoring the nitrates all along the way, and they should be telling us the plan after the sewer gets built. There's just too many holes in this that it just...
But we need more. We also need someone for the Emergency Services Committee, and I'm sure the Utility Committee could use more people.
I'm sure we will. We are full now, but we always want participation, and we're halfway through, so...
I'm not taking a motion to continue this
time. We get people for next time.
Okay, so people, please try to sign up and join one of these committees.
Thank you. Vice President Muthart.
Yes, I would like to encourage people to participate in the Rotary Club of Los Osos Grandparents Day, which is coming up on, Sunday, September 11th. It's a day full of fun. It's going to start with a 9/11 commemorative ceremony, family activities, Grandparents Day, and very important, a raffle. For $2, you could possibly win Southwest Airline tickets to anywhere they fly, and some other prize about a 32-inch screen. So lots of fun. I really encourage everybody to join Rotary, and the theme is old goats and little kids. So there's plenty of those in Los Osos. So it's going to be at...
Little kids?
It's going to be at Baywood Elementary School. And if you need raffle tickets, I do have some.
Tough act to follow. I just have two brief announcements. Morro Bay National Estuary Program, we are having a public meeting on the 29th to provide input into the update of the Estero Programs Management Plan. That will be at not Sweet Springs, at Sea Pines.
Sea Pines Conference Room.
Sea Pines.
6 p.m.
6 p.m. on the 29th. We also, at the Morro Bay, Audubon Society is having a work day at East Sweet Springs on September 24th, Saturday, from 9 to 12. That will be also a good opportunity to contribute to the community. So those two things are upcoming. Last but not least, next week is...
Next week.
We do have the
Labor Day
big pickup coming for trash the week after next. The same week of our special meeting. So that is for people out there that have a lot of stuff they want to have.